Also not present on the battlefield is urban law enforcement. The dozen simultaneous 911 cell phone calls lit up the emergency switchboard like a Christmas tree, and the local police and fire departments were rolling within 40 seconds. Everything was dispatched, all of them, with lights popping and sirens blaring. Every black and white, every available detective, every crime scene technician, every fire engine, every paramedic, every ambulance. Initially, there was complete mayhem. The 911 calls had been panicked and incoherent. But crimes were plainly involved, and they were clearly serious. So the serious crime squad's lead detective was given temporary command. He was a high-quality, 20-year PD veteran who had come all the way up from patrolman. His name was Emerson. He was blasting through slow traffic, dodging construction, hopelessly, desperately, with no way of knowing what had happened. Robbery? Drugs? Gang fight? Terrorism? He had no hard information, none at all. But he was calm, comparatively. His heart rate was holding below 150. He had an open channel with the 911 dispatcher, desperate to hear more as he drove.
"New guy in the cell phone now,"
the dispatcher screamed.
"Who?"
Emerson screamed back.
"Marine Corps, from the recruiting office."
"Was he a witness?"
"No, he was inside, but he's outside now."
Emerson clamped his teeth. He knew he wasn't going to be first on scene, not even close. He knew he was leading from the rear, so he needed eyes. Now, a Marine? He'll do.
"Okay. Patch the Marine through."
There were loud clicks and electronic sounds, and then Emerson heard a new acoustic. Outdoors, distant screaming, the splash of water. A fountain, he thought.
"Who's this?"
he asked. A voice came back, calm but rushed, loud and breathy, pressed close to a cell phone mouthpiece.
"This is Kelly, 1st Sergeant, United States Marine Corps. Who am I speaking with?"
"Emerson, PD. I'm in traffic about 10 minutes out. What have we got?"
5 KIA.
5 dead?
Affirmative.
Shit, Emerson thought. Injured?
None that I can see.
5 dead and no injured?
Affirmative,
the Marine said again. Emerson said nothing. He had seen shootings in public places. He had seen dead people. But he had never seen only dead people. Public place shootings always produced injured along with the dead, usually in a 1-to-1 ratio at least.
"You sure about no one injured?"
"That's definitive, sir."
"Who are the DOAs?"
"Civilians. 4 males, 1 female."
"Shit."
"Yes, sir."
"Where were you?"
"In the recruiting office."
"What did you see?"
"Nothing."
"What did you hear?"
"Incoming gunfire, 6 rounds."
"Handguns?"
"Long gun, I think. Just one of them."
"A rifle?"
"An auto loader, I think. It fired fast, but it wasn't on full automatic. The KIAs are all hit in the head."
A sniper, Emerson thought. Shit. A crazy man with an assault weapon.
"Has he gone now?"
"No further firing, sir."
"He might still be there."
"It's a possibility, sir. People have taken cover. Most of them are in the library now."
"Where are you?"
"Head down behind the plaza wall, sir. I got a few people with me."
"Where was he?"
"Can't say for sure. Maybe in the parking garage? The new part? People were pointing at it. There may have been some muzzle flash, and that's the only major structure directly facing the KIAs.
A warren, Emerson thought, a damn rat's nest.
"The TV people are here,"
the Marine said. Shit, Emerson thought.
"Are you in uniform?"
"Full dress, sir, for the recruiting office."
"Okay, do your best to keep order until my guys get there."
"Aye, aye, sir."
Then the line went dead, and Emerson heard his dispatcher's breathing again. TV people and a crazy man with a rifle, he thought. Shit, shit, shit. Pressure and scrutiny and second-guessing, like every other place that ever had TV people and a crazy man with a rifle. He hit the switch that gave him the old car's radio net.
"All units, listen up," he said. "This was a lone nutcase with a long gun, probably an automatic weapon, indiscriminate firing in a public place, possibly from the new part of the parking garage. So either he's still in there or he's already in the wind. If he left, it was either on foot or in a vehicle. So all units that are more than 10 blocks out, stop now and lock down a perimeter. Nobody enters or exits, okay? No vehicles, no pedestrians, nobody under any circumstances. All units that are closer than 10 blocks, proceed inward with extreme caution, but do not let him get away. Do not miss him. This is a must-win, people. We need this guy today before CNN climbs all over us."
The man in the minivan thumbed the button on the remote on the visor, and the garage door rumbled upward. He drove inside and thumbed the button again, and the door came down after him. He shut the engine off and sat still for a moment. Then he got out of the van and walked through the mudroom and on into the kitchen. He patted the dog and turned on the television. Paramedics in full body armor went in through the back of the library. Two of them stayed inside to check for injuries among the sheltering crowd. Four of them came out the front and ran crouched through the plaza and ducked behind the wall. They crawled toward the bodies and confirmed they were all DOA. Then they stayed right there, flat on the ground and immobile next to the corpses. No unnecessary exposure until the garage has been searched, Emerson had ordered. Emerson double-parked two blocks from the plaza and told a uniformed sergeant to direct the search of the parking garage from the top down from the southwest corner. The uniforms cleared the fourth level, and then the third, then the second, then the first. The old part was problematic. It was badly lit and full of parked cars, and every car represented a potential hiding place. A guy could be inside one, or under one, or behind one, but they didn't find anybody. They had no real problem with the new construction. It wasn't lit at all, but there were no parked cars in that part. The patrolman simply came down the stairwell and swept each level in turn with flashlight beams. Nobody there. The sergeant relaxed and called it in.
Good work, Emerson said.
And it was good work. The fact that they searched from the southwest corner outward left the northeast corner entirely untouched. Nothing was disturbed. So by good luck, or good judgment, the PD had turned in an immaculate performance in the first phase of what would eventually be seen as an immaculate investigation from beginning to end. By 7 o'clock in the evening, it was going dark, and Ann Yanny had been on the air 11 times, 3 of them network, 8 of them local. Personally, she was a little disappointed with that ratio. She was sensitive to a little skepticism coming her way from the network editorial offices. If it bleeds, it leads, was any news organization's credo, but this bleeding was way out there, far from New York or L.A. It wasn't happening in some manicured suburb outside of Washington, D.C. It had a tinge of weirdo from the heartland about it. There was no real possibility that anyone important would walk through this guy's crosshairs, so it was not really primetime stuff. And in truth, Ann didn't have much to offer. None of the victims was identified yet. None of the slain. The local PD was holding its cards close to its chest until families had been notified individually, so she had no heartwarming background stories to share. She wasn't sure which of the male victims had been family men or churchgoers. She didn't know if the woman had been a mother or a wife. She didn't have much to offer in the way of visuals either, just a gathering crowd held 5 blocks back by police barricades and a static long shot down the grayness of First Street, and occasional close-ups of the parking garage, which was where everyone seemed to assume the sniper had been. By 8 o'clock, Emerson had made a lot of progress. His guys had taken hundreds of statements. Marine Corps First Sergeant Kelly was still sure he had heard 6 shots. Emerson was inclined to believe him. Marines could be trusted on stuff like that, presumably. Then some other guy mentioned his cell phone must have been open the whole time, connected to another guy's voicemail. The cellular company retrieved the recording, and 6 gunshots were faintly audible on it. But the medical examiners had counted only 5 entry wounds in the 5 DOAs. Therefore, there was a bullet missing. 3 other witnesses were vague, but they all reported seeing a small plume of water kick out of the ornamental pool. Emerson ordered the pool to be drained. The fire department handled it. They set up floodlights and switched off the fountain and used a pumping engine to dump the water into the city storm drains. They figured there were maybe 80,000 gallons of water to move and that the job would be complete in an hour. Meanwhile, crime scene technicians had used drinking straws and laser pointers to estimate the fatal trajectories. They figured the most reliable evidence would come from the first victim. Presumably, he was walking purposefully right to left across the plaza when the first shot came in. After that, It was possible the subsequent victims were twisting or turning or moving in other unpredictable ways, so they based their conclusions solely on the first guy. His head was a mess, but it seemed pretty clear the bullet had traveled slightly high to low and left to right as it passed through. One tech stood upright on the spot, and another held a drinking straw against the side of his head at the correct angle and held it steady. Then the first guy ducked out of the way, and a third fired a laser pointer through the straw. It put a tiny red spot on the northeast corner of the parking garage extension, second level. Witnesses had claimed they had seen muzzle flashes up there. Now science had confirmed their statements. Emerson sent his crime scene people into the garage and told them they had all the time they needed, but he told them not to come back with nothing. Ann Yanny left the black glass tower at 8:30 and took a camera crew down to the barricades, five blocks away. She figured she might be able to identify some of the victims by process of elimination. People whose relatives hadn't come home for dinner might be gathering there, desperate for information. She shot 20 minutes of tape. She got no specific information at all. Instead, she got 20 minutes of crying and wailing and sheer, stunned incredulity. The whole city was in pain and in shock. She started out secretly proud that she was in the middle of everything, and she ended up with tears in her eyes and sick to her stomach. The parking garage was where the case was broken. It was a bonanza, a treasure trove. A patrolman three blocks away had taken a witness statement from a regular user of the garage, saying that the last slot on the second level had been blocked off with an orange traffic cone. Because of it, the witness had been forced to leave the garage and park elsewhere. He had been pissed about it. A guy from the city said the cone hadn't been there officially. No way. Couldn't have been. No reason for it. So the cone was bagged for evidence and taken away. Then the city guy said there were discreet security cameras at the entrance and the exit, wired to a video recorder in a maintenance closet. The tape was extracted and taken away. Then the city guy said the new extension was stalled for funding and hadn't been worked on for 2 weeks, so anything in there less than 2 weeks old wasn't anything to do with him. The crime scene technicians started at the yellow and black "Caution, Do Not Enter" tape. The first thing they found was a scuff of blue cotton material on the rough concrete directly underneath it, just a peach fuzz of barely visible fiber, like a guy had dropped to one knee to squirm underneath and had left a little of his blue jeans behind. They photographed the scuff and then picked it up whole with an adhesive sheet of clear plastic. Then they brought in Klieg lights and angled them low across the floor, across the two-week-old cement dust. They saw perfect footprints. Really perfect footprints. The lead tech called Emerson on his Motorola.
He was wearing weird shoes.
What kind of weird shoes?
You ever heard of crepe? It's a kind of crude rubber, almost raw, very grippy. It picks everything up. If we find this guy, we're going to find crepe-soled shoes with cement dust all over the soles. Also, we're going to find a dog in his house.
A dog?
We got dog hair here, picked up by the crepe rubber earlier, and then scraped off again where the concrete's rough, and carpet fibers, probably from his rugs at home and in his car.
Keep going, Emerson said.
At 10 to 9, Emerson briefed his chief of police for a press conference. He held nothing back. It was the chief's decision what to talk about and what to conceal.
6 shots fired and 5 people dead, Emerson said. All headshots. I'm betting on a trained shooter, probably ex-military.
Or a hunter? The chief said.
Big difference between shooting deer and shooting people. The technique might be the same, but the emotion isn't.
Were we right to keep away the FBI?
It wasn't terrorism. It was a lone nut. We've seen them before.
I want to be able to sound confident about bringing this one in.
I know.
So, how confident can I sound?
So far, we've got good stuff, but not great stuff.
The chief nodded and said nothing. At 9 o'clock exactly, Emerson took a call from the pathologist. His staff had x-rayed all 5 heads, massive tissue damage, entry and exit wounds, no lodged bullets.
Hollow points,
the pathologist said.
All of them, through and through.
Emerson turned and looked at the ornamental pool. 6 bullets in there, he thought. 5 through and throughs and 1 miss. The pool was finally empty by 9:15. The fire department hoses started sucking air. All that was left was a quarter inch of scummy grit and a lot of trash. Emerson had the lights re-angled and sent 12 recruits from the academy over the walls, 6 from one end and 6 from the other.